Welcome to the 1-0 podcast, hosted by Joe Cook. And also today, Brad Kellner's a little busy, so we've brought in Justin Wells from Inside Texas. Be sure you listen to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts from. Go ahead and listen to Paul and Kevin in the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast as well. And yeah, we'll jump right into it. Justin, this is probably the first time we've, you know, you and I talk all the time about hour-long phone calls, never really have hour-long conversations that we record for the purposes of wide distribution. So I'm kind of excited to do this. It's been a little bit since it's happened.
You know, I think it's probably good that we don't record those hour-long conversations that we have, matter of fact. But yeah, you know, it's funny because we've been working together for so long. We've only done this a few times. Usually it's Ian Boyd and I. He's usually my co-pilot in the podcasting world. And you and BK have such a good back and forth. You have such good chemistry. I think you found a good little match there. And so I always enjoy listening to you guys.
Appreciate it. We started that at the horn. Remember, middays with Trey and BK. It was the pinnacle of daytime radio in Austin. And you and I were a big part of that. And always appreciate both Trey Elling and Brad Kellner. But this isn't technically an Inside Texas podcast, but it kind of is today. So, and last time Brad and I, we went over the spring game, what we liked, what we didn't like, talked quarterback, talked defense, talked a lot of different stuff, but there's been so much since then that's happened. And I'm not sure if you were on the text, but I sent this to Bobby Burton the other day. And I said that, you know, next year, April of 2023, I bet Steve Sarkisian puts the spring game on April 29th because May 1st has become this gigantic deadline day with regards to the portal, with how the NCAA works, with both opening the portal, having it be a thing, and making May 1st, I think on or before May 1st, I can't remember the exact wording, but making May 1st the day you have to be in the portal by, in order to be able to be eligible to use that one-time exception for the fall or winter season. So basically football, volleyball, men's basketball, women's basketball. If you want to use that one-time exception, you got to be in the portal by May 1st. And so, by the way, there's name, image, likeness. And so there's basically tampering. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's not schools doing it. It's representatives loosely affiliated with schools. And I think the biggest example of that as far as a team losing someone is with Jordan Addison. Pitt, Biletnikoff Award winner, wide receiver, one of Kenny Pickett's top targets. And he, you know, there was rumors, I think, on Friday that, okay, is he going to enter the portal? Is he going to consider it? He eventually does. And there's been a host of teams, including Texas, for Brennan Marion, being his former position coach, as teams linked with him. But over the course of the weekend, we were tracking this. We've kind of let it out since then that this very similar thing was set to happen with Xavier Worthy. And Xavier Worthy's pretty happy at Texas. He, you know, was 2 yards or what, like 20 yards short of 1,000 yards. I know that he's got quite a few NIL deals already. He's going to be wide receiver one this upcoming fall, but he's got newfound leverage and he'd be crazy not to use it in order to maximize what he's able to get. And luckily it sounds like Texas was able to, provide Xavier what he was looking for. He never entered the portal or never appeared in the portal. And Texas kind of with some 11th hour work was able to make sure that Xavier Worthy's here for the upcoming season and not testing the waters, so to speak. So, I mean, that's crazy enough in itself. And this is going back. That's a lot. And this is, I remember on April 7th, he was asked, did you even consider entering the portal? And he said, no, why would I leave Sark's offense? I want to win a Big 12 title, mostly paraphrasing, but that was the gist. And to be fair, I don't think he ever really wanted to leave Sark's offense. And you may have seen from that fist bump tweet that he posted that, you know, he's very comfortable with Steve Sarkisian, right. But it makes sense that he may not just even considered, and that had to be something that Texas had to kind of put out a fire with, that he even considered the option of entering the portal. And I think that speaks not so much about Xavier himself, but just about the whole lay of the land as it stands right now.
The lay of the land is filled with holes, valleys, mountains, undiscovered caves. Like we're in a whole new territory, Joe. This is, you know, you and I are in the middle of it. I remember the conversation last weekend when we learned about Xavier Worthy's potentially leaving. And my first thought was, you know, besides having a pit at the bottom of my stomach, was, you know, is this really the direction everybody's going? And then it hit me. Who in the world thought it was a good idea to bring agents into college athletics? Because it's their job to market their players. It's their job to shop their players. Like you said it, Xavier Worthy didn't want to leave Texas. That kid loves Texas. Texas has done everything they could imagine. He's also, outside of Bijan Robinson, the most popular Longhorn on the roster, you know, inside and out. He's a very likable guy. And so you just think to yourself, man, could this really happen? But that's an agent doing his job. And so you can't fault that. And like you said, you can't fault Xavier either for exerting his leverage, because that's also a part of the factor. But there has to be some rules and regulations implemented over the next 12 months. Like you said, if Sark just decides to put the spring game on April 29th, that's ingenious, because that May 1st window is going most likely going to be the window. That's going to be the mark for everybody. You know, Worthy is so important to this program, and I don't think he could go anywhere else and get the type of attention he's going to get at Texas. And I think he knew that. But then again, that's why I'm doubling down on the agents. They know what they're doing. They're doing this for a reason. And if you thought bringing agents into college athletics was a decent idea, it probably wasn't. But this is what we've created. Now, I don't know how you put the tube back in the toothpaste. I don't know how you close Pandora's box. NCAA and legislation, they have that task to try to figure out. Thankfully, you and I don't. We just have to follow along with the reporting. But Texas cannot be in a position where they can be poached. They are a blue blood. It's one thing if you lose a third string corner. It's one thing if you lose a fourth string offensive tackle. They're trying to get more playing time. That happens. If you're Texas, you cannot afford to lose your best players to other schools. Can't do it. Just the perception of that alone is crippling, especially in this day and age with social media and that type of avenue. And so, you know, like I said, there's so much to it, man. There's so much. I think it overwhelmed us this weekend because of the possibility and what was kind of occurring. And then we started hearing about Jahdae Barron and how real that got. And so you just start to think, okay, at some point the adults have to come in the room, non-agents, and kind of set some boundaries, set some ground rules, because don't let the sport eat itself out. Don't let the empire crumble. College football is a staple of Americana, but that's because people at Iowa State think they have a shot on Saturdays. That's because people at Oregon State think they have a shot on Saturdays. Fans at Michigan State think they have a shot. The more of this that happens, I believe, with NIL and with the portal, the less you have, you take away from that. And when you take away the fans, buddy, that's the beginning of the end.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you and I both listened to Josh Pate. I think
love Josh.
And there was something he said the other day. I think it went like, the people who have their hands on the tube are saying, we can't put things back in the tube. It's like, well, how did you think that it was squeezed in the first place? And I thought that was a really good way of putting things. Yeah, I mean, just think of Pitt. Like, hey, you just won the ACC. Hey, you just had your quarterback be the only first-round pick quarterback, and boom, you're going to lose your best player. You're going to lose the guy who's probably better than that first-round pick quarterback. That's crippling for Pitt. That's crippling for a program that has had good history. I mean, it's got Dan Marino. Yeah. It's got some good players in his path. Sony Dorsett, right?
70s, like, Dan Marino, Curtis Martin.
Dude, yeah.
Pennsylvania has always been big for high school football, and it's always translated into Penn State and those schools.
So, but there's, you know, and the other thing about this is that it's not like athletic department money that's going to these NIL deals. I think that's impermissible in all these cases. It's right. Booster money. And Pitt's been around for a while. I think it's a big public school. I think it was founded in the 1700s. It's in a big city in the Northeast. It has a wide depth of people it can attract, right. But they can't, you know, this isn't sustainable. And I think that's an easy refrain for a lot of people. But at the same time, like we're in the, this is the first time we've had to deal with the one-time transfer and also NIL and May 1st, all coming to a head at the same time.
Yep.
So I think we all learned the lesson that this isn't sustainable because there isn't going to be, want to be schools unless they're the ones doing the poaching who want to literally year over year over year over year, have to defend their players from being poached. You're not going to see, just for example, let's say you have, I'm trying to think who's one of a really good FCS player or you know, group of five player that we, let's say Sauce Gardner was a freshman. There we go. That's a really good example. We're going to talk, you know, draft probably a little bit later. Right. Sauce Gardner is a freshman and he goes and, you know, has a tremendous season, kind of similar to what he did this past season, his draft eligible season. In Cincinnati, again, it's a big public school in a populated state. Ohio State's a behemoth, but probably the second biggest school, I think, maybe even third. But they probably don't have the base to that a, you know, Ohio State or Michigan or Notre Dame doesn't really do this, but Notre Dame or, you know, Kentucky or any of these number of schools that could put feelers out through back channels and be like, hey, Sauce, you did good at Cincinnati. You won the AAC. Yeah, you made the playoff. Why don't you come here and win a Big Ten title game and go against, you know, let's say Michigan doesn't do this, but let's say
you want to trade up.
Yeah, you want to trade up. That's not sustainable. These group of five schools who already are playing at a athletic department disadvantage just by TV contracts are then going to be playing at a, you know, booster disadvantage. In some cases to where guys are just going to be like, you know what? We don't want to spend, you know, we only have so much cash to throw. And that's going to, of course, Texas has a deep donor base. It's got a diverse donor base, but patience is going to run out at some point. At some point they're going to see, you know, everybody hopes that Steve Sarkisian has a better year in 5-7. Let's just say for the sake of this hypothetical, they go 7-6. There's going to be a donor base that's going to be like, why are we paying X amount of money for this player when we're going 7-6? And it's going to just kind of eat the sport alive. Like that's where something needs to change. And I think Eric Naleem wrote on Inside Texas, like, you know, yes, we think that players should be able to capitalize off their name, image, and likeness. And I think the original intent was like, yeah, okay, so-and-so can appear in this commercial for Wendy's or a car dealership or, you know, let's see, Stanley's Barbecue, like perfect. Keaton Crawford for Stanley's Barbecue. Everybody's like, yes, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think everybody saw this essential like collective thing coming. And then as a result of that, I think smart people did, but as a result of the collective coming, then it became, you know, all right, who's got the best contract they can offer me? And there's really no remedy for schools to be able to fully prevent that except for mobilizing their own base, and sometimes their own base doesn't want to be mobilized.
It's funny you said Keaton Crawford, because let's just say hypothetically OU came at him last week and, you know, that there could have been some, you know, some opportunities for him to get in the portal and go elsewhere. Best guess they did. And what you're looking at is, yeah, the idea of going to Stanley's down the street and signing autographs, taking pictures, taking selfies, doing all that, making a little bit of change. That's kind of the intention, I think, overall of NIL, to let these guys, you know, make money from what they're doing, from their product. But not sustainable is the best way to put it, because you can't turn fans apathetic. Look, they're already bad. Like you get on social media and you see the best and the worst of sports fans. But you keep this trend, and it will get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. You think it's bad now. You think getting on social media is bad now. Let Xavier Worthy get poached by, let's just say, Oregon. And all of a sudden, I'm telling you, you and I know it well, fans are not going to be happy. And the first person that's going to have an email box filled to the brim is Chris Del Conte.
Yeah.
That's where it would start. And so, boy, it's a new day. And you know, Eric's piece was great, you know, NIL good, portal good, Both together, bad. And it's as simple as that. And I also want to remind people, you know, a lot of these kids do want to trade up. I knew a kid out of Gilmer, safety. He signed with Houston Baptist and had an All-American season his freshman year. And he thought to himself, well, I'm not going to get drafted if I keep playing at Houston Baptist, and I actually could probably play in the league one day. They all think that. Well, Middle Tennessee State comes through, and now he's playing at Middle Tennessee State, and he's starting up there. So he traded up. I think that's a great example of the portal. It's a kid that went somewhere, did really well, made his brand stronger, you know, became developed, and then he went and traded up a little bit. The problem is you can't have the top schools doing that with each other. That's where I think it gets out of control. That's where you see the big million-dollar figures that I promise you are exaggerated. I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure your friends ask you the same, about these dollar figures. And just understand, if you're not the top 1% or 2% in college athletics, you're not getting that. Mm-hmm. And so there just needs to be a balance. I like some of what you can do. I like that a Trey Flewellen from Gilmer can go to Middle Tennessee State, and now he's going to have a shot at possibly getting into an NFL camp when he graduates. I like that type. I don't like Jameson Williams going from Ohio State to Alabama for basically no reason. I don't like an Xavier Worthy potentially going to an Oregon, or, you know, a Caleb Williams holding OU hostage until he goes to USC. And that's another thing. These players are holding these coaches. Hostage is such a poor word. They are holding them to a different standard. And I think even the coaches will admit, we can't do this. It's already so, you know, this coaching at Texas is a beating. Now they get compensated strongly for it, but it's constantly looking at portal, keeping guys on campus, recruiting 2023, recruiting 2024. Hell, they got to start recruiting 3 years ahead, keeping guys on staff, getting plucked from other schools, making sure that Board of Regents gives them, you know, extensions. There's so much stuff already. You pile this on top of it, I think you lose good coaches, Joe. I think you see more guys go to the NFL, and I actually think you could see more guys go back, because in high school in some of these areas, they pay insanely well, and I think it would hurt college coaching overall.
Right. I did this. I forgot where I said it, but the other day, you and I both know one of the best recruiters of the past 5 years that we've seen in the state of Texas is Rashad Samples.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Where Rashad Samples is right now, with the Los Angeles Rams. And part of that has to do for sure with the fact that the Rams offered him that opportunity, and he'd be a dummy not to take going from TCU's running back coach to the Los Angeles Rams running back coach, because you're in the NFL. Boom. You are with Sean McVay, just, you know, who everybody who works with him is seen as worth their weight in gold. But to be fair, Rashad Samples' best attribute as an assistant coach, among many of them, was his recruiting ability. And I'm sure there were other factors that led to it, but he probably saw the way things are going right now and said, yeah, I can recruit, but I can go coach ball and I don't have to deal with all this stuff. And that's someone who was in, University Park, which is 20 minutes away from one of the most fertile recruiting grounds in the country that he drew out of constantly. That's 45 minutes away from Fort Worth. He left that. And I think that he is kind of a poster child for, you know, you're going to lose a lot of coaches who just want to be about ball. And you know, you may see them try and go take NFL opportunities, or you may see them, like you mentioned, kind of dip back to the high school level just because they know that's where they can, A, help kids. I think that's what draws a lot of people to college coaching, is they want to, you know, help 18 to 20 year olds. I think that's we lose that aspect, and with good reason, that's a forgotten aspect, but that's still part of the goal. But it's just becoming so much more to where that's why these coaches are getting paid so much. Cause it's it's a crazy job with their timelines. So I think we've kind of gone around in circle and not around in a circle, but arrived at the same point to where, you know, just Xavier Worthy and even Jonte Barron, who let's be honest, like, he's a good player. He's probably going to start for Texas this fall, if not for sure. And he can play at multiple spots. But he's played barely any – he's barely played at Texas, and he's barely played enough to have a resume worth grabbing, to be quite honest. But he has this ability that he's never had before that he'd be – you know, he is smart to use for his own personal gain.
And Joe, I mean, you and I both know, in particular with Jade, that is a highly intelligent kid.
Yeah.
Texas fans, if you don't know this, I'm going to tell you, if you sit down and talk with Jade Barron for 10 minutes, you're going to learn something.
Yeah.
That kid is incredibly business savvy, plays the stock market. He knows what he's doing. You know, and that agent, I guarantee you, it's probably like two peas in a pod when he's hanging out with that guy. And so, yeah, he's savvy to this, and I think he was trying to use that leverage.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny how the biggest story within college football and with kind of within college athletics, it hit Texas close to home. And luckily, Texas, as it has been most of the offseason, has been a huge beneficiary of it. I mean, just look at Quinn. I put on Inside Texas Today, like, best portal additions and losses. They got Quinn Ewers. I mean, come on. You got a generational quarterback talent via the portal who's using his one-time exception in order to compete for a starting job and play this year. Absolutely. Isaiah Nayor, Ajay Hall, Jaleel Billingsley, Ryan Watts. Like, luckily for Texas, they've been a huge beneficiary of it this year, but kind of in the way that, I mean, whenever Nick Saban warns about something, people should listen.
Amen.
Like, oh, he's speaking about it because he's warning against it. It's like, no, he's warning against it because he cares about the sport, but he's going to go ahead and use it to his advantage.
Absolutely. That's what people don't get with Nick. Nick might be warning you, but in the same breath behind him, is he's plotting on how he's going
to
use it.
Right. When he's like, is this what we want football to become with the spread offense?
You want me to do this?
To do this? Boom. Mac Jones, Tua Tagovailoa, Bryce Young,
yeah.
Devonta Smith. Just look at the past 5 years. He went from a Derrick Henry offense to a Devonta Smith offense. And he warned us.
The fourth receiver won the Heisman.
Right. He warned us, and yet people don't listen. So kind of hit everything on Texas there. Let's see. Trying to think. There's not so much going on in the basketball world. Took a few transfers, one from New Mexico State. Still kind of working through that. And basketball, I think, has a similar May 1st deadline. So we'll see about that. So, recruiting. It's about to be official visit season. It's about to be camp season. It's about to be spring ball season. And I think first you got to start at the top. And this is something that we saw on three today from our buddy Joseph Hastings. One of the three main candidates for Arch Manning services has been Alabama throughout this whole process. Right. It kind of seems right now it's gone down to, you know, Clemson took a quarterback commit. Ole Miss took a quarterback commit. They were perceived as guys in on that battle. LSU doesn't seem to be too much of a factor. Seems to be Texas, Alabama, and Georgia. And our buddy Joseph Hastings over at On3 put in a prediction for Eli Holstein, former Texas A&M commit, to go to Alabama and be part of their class. Solid quarterback. I think one of the top five, maybe top one of the tops in the country.
He just put out the best spark score in Elite 11 history. The pride of Zachary, Louisiana. I went back and actually watched a little bit more. Joe, he is as good as any of the other prospects. And there's some great quarterbacks in 2023. I don't want to go too much, but I'm telling you, Eli Holstein is a dude in Alabama. Woo,
this is a great quarterback class. Like between, yes. I think,
Malachi,
very hot take. I think from physical and on-tape capabilities, Malachi, Dante Moore than Arch. But mentally, I think Arch makes it so where he's equal or surpassing those guys. That's neither here nor there. I'll let that marinate. Right. But Texas is in on Arch Manning, and Alabama going ahead and seemingly about to be taking Eli Holstein seems to bode well for Texas, considering it's going to make it a two-team race between them and Georgia if Holstein does end up going to the Crimson Tide.
The best way to summarize the Arch Manning recruitment today, what's the one consistent school that's been through it the entire time? Texas. That's just the way it is. You know, Nelson Stewart, the head coach, is Isidore Newman. I don't say enough good things about that guy. For him to handle the recruitment the way he has, because he wants to give Arch, he's close to the family. He played with the Mannings and Isidore Newman. You know, he wants to give Arch as much as a normal high school life as possible. And so he is shielding a ton of media, a ton of coaches to try to normalize it as much as they possibly can. And I guarantee you the Mannings are unbelievably thankful and grateful for that. That being said, if you talk to Nelson Stewart for 20 minutes, you're going to walk away and think, man, Arch Manning in Texas makes a lot of sense, because this is a guy that loves offense, loves to be innovative. Sark has literally brought him in and shown him everything they do. At one point, Coach Stewart told me that he talks to AJ Milwee more than he does his wife. And that's because Texas is all in. I asked him one time, isn't it kind of crazy that Arch is the only quarterback Texas has offered in this class? He goes, no. He says, it's smart. It shows they're all in. And he says, I think that's what's going to matter in the end. And so, yeah, just to summarize Arch, Texas is the consistent. Now, listen, Arch is just like any other high school kid. He likes to have a good time. Austin, Texas, and Athens, Georgia will both present him that. He will both be – he'll be able to enjoy the college life in both those atmospheres. But with Eli Holstein coming off the board, winning if he does, to Alabama, you can knock them out of the loop, and now it's down to two. And I think Arch Manning probably wants it that way. I think that kind of helps him out, actually. It's one less phone call, because if people don't know this, there are oftentimes Arch and his family has called these schools and said, thank you so much for recruiting me, but you don't have to call anymore. I know for a fact they did that with Clemson. I was told they may have done that with Ole Miss as well. Thank you so much, but probably no thank you. And so that's another thing that Arch and those guys do. But at the end of the day, the one consistent's Texas, I can't wait to go back down there and see him again and talk to him, because when he talks about Sark, his eyes, there's a gleam in his eye. When he calls the guy a football genius, a kid like Arch Manning doesn't just throw that word out. This is a smart kid. And going back on all of it, you know, it's he's in a great 2023 cycle. There's so many talented guys. Eric and I saw Malachi Nelson a couple months ago in 7-on-7, and we looked at each other and thought, that's the best throwing quarterback we've seen. Like, that kid's incredible. You mentioned Dante Moore. His upside and ceiling may be higher. You got Amaliva. You've got all these guys. And then Eli Holstein, who I'm telling you is really good. And in the past, that's an LSU kid through and through. He does not leave the state. But for whatever reason, the Brian Kelly regime's kind of catching up from behind. Arch Manning in Texas makes too much sense right now. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I'm sticking with my boy Eric's pick. I think he's on the right path. I'm sticking with my pick with Will Randall, because I do think that's a data point. I don't think it's the big factor. I do think it's part of the factor. Mm-hmm. And I think Will Randall does wind up at Texas. I think that happens sooner than later. And I think that only helps with Arch as well.
Yeah, anybody who follows along on Inside Texas knows how judicious we are with picks or anything like that. And for us,
I've made one. I was told the other day I should make a couple more.
Yeah, but for y'all to that speaks to where we think these recruitments may be headed. Right. Look back a little bit before we look forward. Texas landed a couple of commits in the month of April. Two during the spring game. Two that kind of caught us.
9 o'clock Saturday night. Exactly. That's not when you're supposed to commit recruits. I'm just
kind of caught us by surprise. Trey Weiser, formerly at running back, formerly at Waco, Connolly, and Ryan. He's at DeSoto now. Ryan Niblett from Aldine Eisenhower in the Houston area. So we'll start with Weiser. I think a lot of people thought that, or still believe, rightfully so, that the black unicorn Reuben Owens from El Campo is the prize of this class, and they're very much correct in that. But what does Trey Weisner bring as someone who probably understands that that's what Tashard Choice is after in this class, and yet still decided that Texas was where he wanted to jump into?
He brings you a tier one running back in a almost guaranteed two running back class. He is in the tier one. I think the best case scenario for Texas would be get Reuben Owens and then a complimentary guy as a running back two in the cycle, a Cameron Cook, a Quentin Joyner, you know, somebody like that. I don't think they thought Trey Weisner was going to happen. And that's because for the first year of covering his recruitment, I don't think he could have said more nice things about Oklahoma. Like, I almost wrote him off completely. That kid's going to OU. I mean, he was taking pictures with the horns down. And for high school kids, that's usually kind of silliness that comes from an Oklahoma, you know, driven deal. This is a slasher. This is a kid with kind of an edge to him. He's a little rough around the edges, man. He's a tough kid. He's got some animal in him, and he plays hard. I think it's great for DeSoto. One, because I think they really needed an all-purpose type back to help that offense go. Two, he's hanging out with Jonte Cook. And if I wouldn't have known any better, I'd have thought Texas had something to do with that, because I love where Jonte Cook it stands with Texas right now. And A&M is the top contender to fight Texas off for Cook. But the fact that Wisner's hanging out with Jonte Cook now, that helps Texas. The fact that Tashard Choice can literally flip a kid that had the mindset of nothing but crimson and cream, and then all of a sudden, he not only flips his mindset, he commits. That was a big deal. That was a huge deal. And trust me, they were not expecting Wisner or Niblett to commit on Saturday night. That, well, I think what happened was all that work and the accumulated to one, it was the culmination of one time, like a kind of a being in the moment. I definitely know that happened with Niblett, and that may, you know, it may cost some other receivers, but yeah, Wisner's a running back one. If you can get a Reuben Owens with Wisner, that's an A+ running back class, period. Mm-hmm. And the best part about getting Wisner, they don't have to mess with any other running back twos. They can put 100% focus on Reuben and assure him who he's potentially, like Jerry Hamilton reported, he's potentially taking in a visit to Texas in June. They can focus all – they can narrow everything down to Reuben and not have to mess with any of these other running backs. And I think that actually – and same thing with Niblett to a sense. It gives them an idea, okay, we've got this guy. Now we can narrow it down to some others.
Yeah, and then Ryan Niblett, who kind of – I mean, just looking at the RPM, Texas was up there, but Alabama was right there. It didn't seem like Texas was in. I don't think he was even in their top, in whatever his top group was. And it's kind of a shame because it's a Houston area guy. He's running, I'm looking at his athletic.net page, 10 fours in the 100 and like right at 22 in the 200. And he makes the call after the spring game, sees the offense, sees something he likes and makes the call. And that's from an area in Houston that Texas has had been up and down with in the past 5 years, with the exception of one cycle. So, and that's a position that basically until Sarkisian showed up, Texas struggled to recruit. And now it seems like not so much, what's the right metaphor to use? Basically, it's not a struggle to recruit. People know that, I mean, Steve Sarkisian has some very good players to sell in his offense in recent years, including last year now at Texas, finally, including recent years in at Alabama. But now he's got Xavier Worthy. Now he's got, you know, evidence of, hey, I've got the Quinn Ewers guy throwing passes back there. It's helping on the recruiting trail, and that got Niblett, who is a top 100 prospect and, you know, top 90 even by On3 standards.
Steve Sarkisian opened the door to these receivers. Brennan Marion closed it, mm-hmm. brought him in and closed it. He got the cup of coffee. Like, Sark always could always get in conversations. We saw the last cycle. Texas was in on a lot of those big-time receivers, including Evan Stewart, who committed to them at one point. But, you know, I'm not here to bash Andre Coleman. I'm just going to tell you, they didn't have a closer for those guys. Sark's offense, his genuine personality, that's attractive to receivers. Then you brought in Brennan Marion, that's double time. That's overtime right there. Marion, to me, is the one that it was like the missing piece to making sure you surround that wide receiver room with talent. Niblett, the funny thing about Niblett is, like you said, Texas wasn't in his top schools list a couple months ago. The truth was no one really had a read on Ryan Niblett's recruitment. I mean, we knew he liked a few schools. We knew the big schools were on him. He didn't really give away too much. I don't think he really knew, and fans need to understand that too. You know, every time we ask a kid, well, what do you think about this school or who's your favorite school? A lot of times they don't know. They really don't. They're trying to figure it out themselves. And so with Niblett, I think some of that came to fruition. He saw the wide open offense, the vertical, them going vertical in the spring game. and then Brennan Marion and Xavier Worthy. I talked to Jalen Hill the other day after his visit to Texas at the regional track meet, and Xavier Worthy is the guy. He's like, I love X. I love watching him. I love how they find mismatches for him. And then Brennan Marion, where did he go yesterday? He went by Longview High School. He hung out with Hell for an hour. They talked and hung out. And, you know, once he left, one of my sources over there told me, guys, Texas is in this. And we couldn't say that a year ago, Joe. We couldn't say that a year ago. Sark opened the door, but the guys couldn't close him up. Now you got a Brennan Marion, and you'll get those. You'll get those Ryan Niblett types. You'll close those Jonte Cooks types and hopefully, you know, grab a Jalen Hill, a Jaquez Petaway, or a Jonah Wilson.
So that's kind of looking back a little bit. Moving forward, we got a bunch of official visits coming up over the next month or two. And we can kind of go into more skill guys. We've touched on a lot of them on offense, but I think I want to focus on offensive line real quick before we talk some NFL draft. And that's, basically, we put out at Inside Texas, put out a story of Eric Nalin talked about, and I'm sure it was obviously in consultation with you and Jerry and Bobby about, you know, a prospective class. And don't want to go too into the details on who's in it, who's not, something to check on Inside Texas, but there's five. That was the thing that kind of surprised me, is that after taking seven last cycle, flirting with taking, you know, either seven in a grad transfer or six in a grad transfer, that this is a class where they see one, two, three, four, five guys, four assured offensive linemen and one with a, you know, the option to play both ways. Times. And I know that there's one lineman in particular. Here's the thing. And this, you're going to very much dislike me for this. I don't believe in triple option linemen. I just think that it's not worth.
I know where this is going.
It's not. I know. Nothing against the kid. Nothing against the great program. But I just don't think, unless he's 6'5", 310 already and has feet like Drew Timmy, I just don't think that that's worth the squeeze. But you're going to think differently. Especially when he's probably rated as the highest rated offensive lineman, interior offensive lineman in the country. And by the way, he's from West Texas, and a bunch of different schools from around the country and the state are in on him in Harris yeah. Sewell. So why am I wrong with my, I love option offenses, but I'm not necessarily a believer in option offensive linemen like Odessa Permian's Harris Sewell. Why am I wrong? And then also, where's Texas stand with that recruitment?
I can't tell you you're wrong, because often it doesn't translate. I believe a couple of years ago, Texas brought in the kid from Georgia Tech, the offensive lineman that was used to
running. Parker Braun, right?
Yeah, the triple. I believe Coach Johnson was running the triple option over there. And for some reason, it didn't translate into a spread offense at Texas. He didn't play like he should have played, and because he was so used to doing that. So I think there's a legitimate – that's a legitimate hypothesis, man. That's some analysis. You have to look at that. With Harris, he's 6'4", 6'5", 305, 310. He's one of those, even if he's in that system, you don't pass up somebody that's that big, that strong, that smart. And at the end of the day, Kyle Flood loves him. And how we can tell that is because a year ago, Texas didn't look great in this recruitment. Kyle Flood went to work, and now Texas is squarely in the mix, to the point where they're going to get an official from Sewell, whether it's in late June or another time. I think it's going to be whenever Arch takes his official. I think they're trying to match those up, because Harris and Arch have built a relationship. They talk back and forth now. And so I don't disagree with your premise, because we've seen it not work. We've seen guys come in. Oh, he started at Georgia Tech for 4 years. Yeah. In an offense that's archaic. And it didn't translate. It actually hurt Texas. Come to find out, he couldn't pass block. Mm-hmm. And so you have a good stance there. They're going to take four, in my opinion. Five would be Marcus Deal, if he's an O-line, D-line type guy. I think they'll take the first four. I do feel like Sewell and probably Jaden Chapman have a scholarship waiting for them through the cycle. And I say that because I think Chapman's a Texas lean, and I think it doesn't matter when he – I don't think it matters with him. I actually think that'll be over with by the end of the summer.
And there's also plenty of holes in my argument because, I mean, look, Cole Hudson has had a lot of positive reviews coming from Frisco High. And to be fair, Frisco and Odessa Permian, they're not running the veer. You know, they do a little bit of everything, but it's a lot of run first, run forward.
Frisco
offense.
Runs a lot. It's a lot of
right.
run.
Right.
A lot of zone stuff.
Yeah, kind of maybe pseudo how Duncanville does things. Duncanville always seems to get quarterback and receiver talent to where they do pass, but
only Coach four or five times a game.
Coach just Samples has his way. Yeah, yeah. He likes running the ball the way they
just kind of
like
the defense honest.
I guess kind of like that. So it's not, you know, they're not running like you mentioned Parker Braun, Georgia Tech style, just straight flex bone triple. But I don't know. I'm always a little wary with the option quarterback. So, all right, good stuff.
I was wary, and to add one note, I was a little wary of Roy Williams coming out of high school, Permian. Mm-hmm. And I think he caught, 10 passes his senior year? He barely ran any routes. Mm-hmm. And so, but to that extent, you know, he was a freak athlete, and you don't question freak athletes. So, Harris isn't that type of athlete, but he definitely is the best O-lineman in the state.
Gotcha. So, good talk on the offensive line, and for all the different recruiting stuff, we're going to have that mapped out on Inside Texas over the next month. So now it's time for you to brag, or maybe not brag, about what happened with the Cowboys draft. And I got to admit, first round is he's a great story, considering what he had to overcome in his life to be able to just to play football.
Right.
But do you think he was the 16th best prospect like Jerry and Steven claim he was? Or and I know that was a position of need, but was he the right what's his name? I'm forgetting his
Tyler
name.
Tyler Smith.
Tyler Smith, offensive lineman from Tulsa.
They reached. They saw the athleticism similar to Tyron Smith, except Tyler doesn't have that size. But they saw that athleticism. I thought Tyler Linderbaum would have been perfect because they did lose their center, and they traded – Connor Williams, and they released L. Collins. And so I thought, do it from the inside out. But this is – you know what's funny? The Cowboys, Jerry Jones always has to feel like he's always the right guy in the room. He's always right. And so they literally show you a chart of their draft. How many other franchises did that, Joe? None.
None on their own accord.
How many other owners stand up for every draft press conference – brag about, we got our guy, which you and I both know that rarely happens. And then he wants to me, that's just overcompensating for the fact that they probably messed up on this one. I wanted him to go O-line. You know how I feel. I think you should draft offensive line the first round of every draft if you're a franchise ever. You pick up everybody else later. But Dallas didn't make hay in those first few rounds. Tyler Smith was a reach. I like the Tolbert kid, the receiver. I think they had to bring in somebody else because they traded Amari Cooper and they lost I can't think of his name. They lost another guy. And so they had to bring in somebody. They really made their hay in the fourth round. I think they had three, maybe four picks there. And I think they did really good there, especially on the offensive line and at edge on the defensive side, because they needed to have somebody to get to the quarterback. But I gave the Cowboys a C+. And it's one of those things where we don't really know when, we don't know for a few years how the draft classes actually, you know, plan out. We give them grades like we know what we're talking about. But I think they hit some needs spots. But what I was really surprised with was how well Houston drafted. And not only how well they did, I feel like their scouts didn't leave the area code. I feel like they went for two guys. If you're from Texas, notably Houston, and you played in the SEC, if you did those two things, you're probably on their draft board in 2022. And so you heard my spiel on the Cowboys. I want to hear yours on Houston. And I'll say, I like the Stingley pick. I think you and I have both seen Stingley be the best cover corner in college football. That was 2 years ago.
Right.
So there's a reason to be worried. But getting him, Jalen Petrie from Baylor, who I absolutely love, Kenyon Green's going to come in and play immediately. Give me your take on the Texans.
So if you look at that 2019 LSU team, Joe Burrow, far and away the best player, it's hard not to think Derek Stingley wasn't the second best player. The problem was in 2020 and 2021, he didn't play that much. But when you're Lovie Smith, you're a defensive guy, that's the probably the biggest glaring hole on the roster right now is cornerback. Yeah, you take that guy who you think you can use and turn football into 10-on-10. Kind of interesting they chose him over Sauce, but, you know, it's one of you take your pick either way. I really like that pick, and, yeah, I'm the same way with being real high on – from what we've seen. I mean, you and I saw him up close and personal both in high school and when he played Texas that year and throughout 2019. It was no problem with that. I like the Kenyon Green pick. I like that they traded back, and I like that they just moved picks. Like, they weren't afraid. They had accumulated a good amount of picks. They're in the middle of a rebuild. That's the right way to do things.
Absolutely.
And they were 13. I think they realized they could get Kenyon Green at 15, moved back two, got more picks, and still got him. In addition, that moves Titus Howard outside, and you've got three, four, maybe your entire O-line settled. And that's a guy who, in a big-time pinch, you can play him at tackle, but you know that he's going to be an All-American. He was an All-American guard, I think, and now you've got a great guard there in the middle. I'm a big fan of Kenyon Green, was a big fan of him in high school,
too. We covered him from his freshman year at Atascocita.
So Petrie's great, just a football player. They needed secondary help. They have it now at both corner and safety. Mechie, I'm a little interested in because, you know, I don't think he's just a pure D burner, especially now that his knee is, you know, we're waiting on an ACL to heal. But he was still one of the best receivers on a great offense. And maybe, just maybe, it kind of is a hint to Bryce Young for next year, because, you know, the Texans aren't going to – they know they're not winning this year.
Maybe, and you know, like, Bryce Young's going number one overall.
Hey, you want to come and play with this guy again? Christian Harris, big fan of. I'm not sure about the running back pick. They definitely needed a running back, but they do.
Why would they tell people they're getting Breece Hall?
It's been like four or five drafts in a row that they've done something like that. And it seems that it always happens to where – somebody hears that, jumps up to one pick ahead of him, and boom, takes Breece Hall. I would have loved Breece Hall to be on the Texans. Now, I don't know too much about the Oregon State tight end, but they've already got Brevin Jordan from the U from last year, and that was someone who did pretty well.
Yeah,
I do like the Austin Deculus pick because I don't know if he's going to stick at tackle in the pros, but he played a ton of football at LSU. So here's the thing. I know the Texans probably want to be one of those top picks next year, but they drafted well enough to where – and some of the other guys on that team have played well enough to where I don't know if they're going to be – I mean, they tried to lose as much as they could, and they still won four games this year or something like that. So
I think the defense is going to be better. They know that they're going to put a better defense, and they know they're not going to spend too much on offense right now because they don't have to.
Right.
So they can wait for that franchise quarterback to be in the next draft.
For the first time in a while, I have some optimism about how the Texans are going. So it's NFL dominates. Hey, in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about the schedule, and it's the NFL schedule. That's what we're talking about. Like, they dominate the sporting conversation.
NFL offseason is such a big deal.
It's
especially
crazy
this year, where all these big name receivers get traded out of nowhere.
Yeah,
but it shows you how easily these franchises feel like they can replace these guys.
Yep, or just they don't want to pay them.
Well, that's that too. But I mean, I'm not paying Tyreek Hill on the downside. You want to pay him on the upside. Once you get to that third contract, that's when you got to start really evaluating stuff. But yeah, I want to say this about Mechie. To me, he's either going to be a Waddell type or a Ruggs type. He's in the middle somewhere. He's either going to be just a speed guy that doesn't do anything else like Ruggs did, or he's going to be like a Waddell who's quick twitch, who can catch in space, can make things happen. To me, he's going to be one of those two. And I think – did they keep Brandon Cooks in the offseason? I can't remember.
I think they either picked up his option or they dealt him.
I felt like they dealt him. Even if they didn't, I feel like that's a guy that – at some point, we'll
see. No, he's still on the Texans right now.
That's a guy. Brandon Cooks is a great professional athlete. He's somebody to look up to. And I think that's a good thing that Michi's going to be in the same room with him.
Exactly. So, That about does it. We'll skip baseball for now because that's not fun to talk about. And
well, not college baseball. And then the Astros are – I don't know what's going on with the Astros. I need to know about Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez. I need to know what I need to do with my fantasy team.
You need
the
to pick Rangers, up Jeremy Pena.
Hey, I picked up Jeremy Pena 2 weeks ago. He's there my backup shortstop now. And the Rangers have won four in a row, six of seven. I don't know how. So I wish it was. I wish we could find some balance there. But yeah, I digress.
We'll see. But man, thanks for speaking of baseball. Thanks for pitch hitting for Brad. Got to do this more. We haven't done a you and me podcast in a long time, and we gotta make this happen a little bit more. We'll see what we can do. So
I agree.
Always a friend of Brad and mine, and part of the IT family. So. Thank you for listening to the 1&0 podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, review, do everything you do for podcasts. Be sure to listen to Paul and Kevin on Everyone Gets a Trophy and partake in their sponsors as well. And we will see you next week to talk more Texas sports, Houston sports, Dallas sports, and anything in between.